What is up, friends? Welcome to a new edition of the Selby Is God Cast. I am TJ Zuppi. He is Zach Meisel. We are back and on the scene and ready to discuss Tampa Bay Ray trades. Wait, what? I must have got the wrong notes before this podcast began. This is not what we normally discuss. This is not what we talk about. Don't you have a game you'd like to review or something, Zach? This doesn't feel right.
Yeah, I thought this was part two of our 1998 ALCS Game 2 recap. No? I thought we had another 2 hours of conversation.
Why did I watch Game 3 if we're not going to talk about it? No, this is not going to be that. We do hope everybody enjoyed that special holiday treat. We probably will have one more of those game recaps before the offseason begins if you missed it. I know everyone was doing their own thing for the holidays. So if you did miss it, we will forgive you. It is still there. It's still ready to be listened to. Game 2 of the 1998 ALCS. That's the first thing you think of when you're trying to think of what were great Indians playoff games. You might have forgotten some cool details about it. So if you did, go back and catch the last episode of this podcast before this one. But welcome to a new edition. What's up, brother? How were the holidays for you? How was your Christmas?
I love Christmas. So much sugar, just so much candy and chocolate and cookies. And now I feel like if I don't eat a Hershey's Kiss or one of those peanut butter blossom cookies every 10 minutes, I start to go into a little bit of like, I get the shakes. So kind of in the post-Christmas withdrawal and trying to maybe make it a cookie every 30 minutes instead of 10, just trying to wean myself off a little bit as we head into the new year.
Yeah, this is not quite Yankee Stadium, dude. You don't have to go that wild on the sweets and the chocolates.
You know what we could talk about today? Someone asked me what press dining I missed most in 2020. Should we do our rankings?
I feel like we might have done this before, but for anyone that has missed it, they would love to hear your favorite press dining. I mean, you didn't go anywhere this year, did you?
I didn't go anywhere exciting. I didn't leave the state of Ohio. I went to Cincinnati.
Yeah.
I think that's it. I mean, I was in Arizona forever, but, what's your favorite?
Loved Kansas City. The breakfast there was great.
They went downhill though.
Yeah. Okay. But anytime you leave out nacho cheese on demand for the writers, I got to tell you, I'm going to have a soft spot for that one. Or anywhere where you leave snacks out post game, which they did in St. Louis, was so very thankful for that, because in Cleveland, they close that thing up in the fourth inning.
If you don't sprint to Seattle, they still leave out big cans of beer post game.
Yeah, what is that? Where is the beer after the game? That's not really a thing they do anymore, unfortunately. But if you ask anybody that covered teams in like the 80s, they'll tell you about, oh yeah, they just had a bartender there for you. Like, what? I covered the team in the wrong... Clearly, I was in the wrong generation. New York is obviously going to be, though, at the front of pretty much any line you can think of. It's largely because of the desserts. I mean, the desserts are so beyond spectacular that I don't even know that I can put them into words. But not being able to do that this year was very disappointing. I won't lie.
Yeah, I mean, the Yankees are number one. I think they're in their own tier. Just the daily options that you have. And the quality is so much higher than anywhere else.
There are a number of ballparks where there is food in the concession area that I really like. There's a sandwich shop in Chicago for the White Sox down the right field line that is really good. And I make a point there anytime I go there to make sure I go get a sandwich down there. But that's not their press dining. The press dining not something you want to try out.
You have to go to that sandwich shop because, first of all, they have like the reincarnation of the soup Nazi serving you food. And if you say the wrong thing, you get just a menacing glare. And I'll never forget going there on a Sunday and, you know, it's morning. It's a day game. And you walk in at like 10:30 or 11 a.m. and they're serving halibut. And I'm like, come on. Like, and it's not even good. Like, it's their quality is just terrible. That's one of the worst. And the thing is, there are so many more bad ones that stick out in your mind than good ones.
this is truly what everyone came to this podcast to hear.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Two out of shape idiots talking about the food that they don't like. Meanwhile, the people out there this time of year that would love to have any food, and here is us talking like we're fat kings. No, thank you. Send that back to the kitchen. I do not need this. Can I end on one positive before we wrap this up? Yeah. In Houston, I don't know if they do this all the time, but when I was there the last time I was there, Chick-fil-A is in the ballpark serving pre-packaged chicken sandwiches. I don't care if those were made 4 hours ago. I don't care if they were made 4 days ago. I got a couple of those things, ate them throughout the game. That was tremendous. I don't need anything more. So I'm truly a simple man. A Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich. Give me the option to buy a couple of those during really every game. I'm a happy man. Very happy.
There's a few parks that I think I remember in Atlanta's Old Park, which it feels weird to say old because it was made in the 90s. Turner Field had that. I want to say, I remember being covering the Tigers in spring training in Lakeland, Florida. And that was like the only concession they had. I had a daydream over the weekend where I was just imagining like a typical summer night, the sun setting, just that aroma in the ballpark of like hot dogs and grilled onions and the sizzling peppers and like stale beer. And like just, I miss that. Like that's everything that was weird about 2020 and that we were missing in 2020. And, you know, we're talking about traveling and, you know, not going to spring training for as long and, you know, not having access and all that. Just like the simple thing of walking into the ballpark and smelling hot dogs being cooked. Like that, I miss that. And I think fans miss that. You miss hanging out at the ballpark and spending an exorbitant amount of money on crappy food that you probably could make yourself in your backyard, but for some reason it just tastes a little bit better at the ballpark. I hope we get back to some normalcy in 2021 and we can have that again.
An ability to do that, I'm really looking forward to 2021 in that regard. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, and I think it's teams are too. I mean, they're owners and owners will always find a convenient reason to not spend money in any sport. And I think the uncertainty clouding the 21 season in baseball has teams really gun-shy and prepping as though they're not going to have any money to spend because forget about 2020 and what that did to revenues across the league, which still you can poke holes in some of these things that have been said. But, you know, there is uncertainty about 2021. And are you going to play 162 games? And are you going to have fans? You know, what percent capacity are you going to be able to fill even if there aren't super heavy restrictions? You know, I wouldn't be surprised if there are some fans who have a little bit of trepidation who want to wait till the immunity or the vaccine is pretty widespread before they start going to crowded places in public. So there's just so much uncertainty. And I think, you know, teams more than anyone want things to go back to normal. They want people to be able to be comfortable and come and, you know, pack the corner and drink beer and build pyramids and sling hot dogs. So, yeah, I hope we're trending toward that sense of normalcy, but there's still a ways to go, it seems like.
Unless you're a team like the Padres that are just, they're out there. They're making moves. They fully anticipate building on what they did in 2020. They should because they're a fun, exciting team, a lot of youth, and now they've added to their pitching staff with Blake Snell and the trade they made yesterday with Tampa Bay. There's some reasons to discuss it, though. You and I were bantering a bit about it. Maybe it's just our eagerness to talk about any sort of moves because there's just been so little to sink your teeth into this offseason for anybody. Forget about the Indians. I mean, it's all possible Lindor trades, but it's not even trades that are linked to any sort of report. It's just all of our speculation and trying to find a trade partner. So a deal actually goes down between San Diego and Tampa Bay. I have to find some way that this connects to the Indians, right? I mean, that's at this point, I'm grasping onto anything I can get.
Well, I think it does in the sense of this is a product of how baseball, many teams operate in 2020 and in 2021. Depending on when you listen to this. But I think it's, you know, the Indians and Rays are kind of on similar wavelengths here in their philosophy. And it speaks about how teams approach things so much differently than they did 10, 15, 20 years ago. And I think that there's a pretty broad discussion to be had. I think we should also mention that it's possible that by the time we're done recording this, the Padres will have also traded for Yu Darvish, which is pretty nuts. It seems like those two teams were decently far along in trade talks based on some reports out there. So I think this is an appropriate topic for us to talk about, because I think what the Indians want to do is kind of what the Rays have been doing for years. And I think the Snell trade really highlights it, and I think puts a microscope on what they're doing and makes you question, is that mode of operation what's best for baseball? Like, should teams be in the position where, I mean, you had a team that made the World Series just traded its ace, who is signed for a well below market deal for 3 more years. Like, that, the fact, regardless of like what they got back for him or what their revenue streams are, what their payroll can be, ignore all that for a second. Like, the fact that that happened in itself, that's not good. Like, that doesn't help you grow the sport. That doesn't help you, it doesn't help a team gain more fans. It doesn't help a casual fan remain a baseball fan. Like, that's not good. And
yet it almost feels like anyone that is a hardcore baseball fan really gets some enjoyment out of watching a team build a franchise that way.
Right.
It's another thing that just doesn't, they don't coincide, this advanced level of thought on how you build a franchise and a structure and operate in a market like Tampa has to. That doesn't blend well with what brings in casual fans and what necessarily carries the big storylines on ESPN or what is best for business.
And it's a delicate balance, because if you're the Rays, like, you could point to the Indian situation right now and say, well, we didn't want to get stuck having to trade him when we had absolutely no leverage. I mean, the Indians, look, when they trade Francisco Lindor, a lot of people are probably going to construe it as a pure salary dump, just because the return doesn't look like what it could have looked like a year ago or 2 years ago. And, you know, we've talked about all the hurdles standing in the way of them, standing in the way of them actually pulling off this sort of trade. So it's really difficult. And I think, I mean, these teams in these smaller markets, and I hate even using that phrase, but the Tampas and the Oaklands and now the Clevelands have figured out that, look, there isn't the return on investment. There isn't an ideal return on investment for going, quote unquote, all in. You know, you used to try to just build the absolute just juggernaut roster to win 115 games, because if you won that many games in the regular season, odds are, like, you stood the best chance of winning in the playoffs. And, you know, if you didn't come through, you just choked and, you know, there was nothing you could do. You did everything you could. Well, that team's figured out that that's not the most efficient way to do business. And, you know, front offices are much, much smarter than they used to be. And they've got all these Ivy League grads running the operations, and you've got owners who want to pinch every penny they possibly can. And so what stinks is that it makes no sense from the standpoint of what sports are all about, and that's the fans. And if you live in Tampa, it's like, okay, well, why would I ever buy a jersey of any player on this roster? Like, cool, they, you know, you can make the argument that it's like, okay, they made the World Series, and like the way they value players, like, certainly no pitcher is too valuable, right? Snell wasn't allowed to pitch in the sixth inning. They use openers all the time. They have a constant shuttle between AAA and the major leagues with relievers. So it's like, why would I ever buy someone's jersey? No one's going to stick around here. Like, cool, they have the best farm system in baseball by a mile. Wander Franco is the top prospect, and he could make his debut in 2021. But who's to say that he won't be traded in 3 years? Like, it doesn't help you develop that attachment with your fan base. And I think that makes things tough. And then you look at, like, other fans across the league, or like if you're a New Yorker, all you ever do is look at who the young up-and-coming studs are on other rosters, because you know that there's a chance that they're going to play for your franchise in a couple of years. So it's just, it's not healthy. And I don't know what the resolution is here. And look, the Rays, I texted you last night, like, I think they got a haul. I think they got four really intriguing pieces. Patino is a really, really good young pitcher. Francisco Mejia, like, look, he's been traded twice. The Indians didn't believe in his defense. He hasn't proven he can hit at the major league level, but the kid's got a ton of talent. He was a top 25 prospect in baseball. And the Rays have, I know they re-signed Zunino, but they had a need at catcher. And then they got two other really good young prospects. So it's a great haul. It's exactly the sort of trade that the Rays make. I don't know why teams keep dealing with them, but like, it's just sad that it had to happen. And or we could even argue, did it have to happen? Does it make them better in 2021? No. So if it doesn't, if you just made the World Series and you're actively trying to make your team worse in the present and better in the future, like, what are we doing here?
Those are all very fair points. It's stuff that we've talked about in regard to the Indians many times, and it touches home with the possibility of a Francisco Lindor trade, which I might be having a change of heart on, or brain on. I don't know what is changing, but something, in my opinion, might be altered based on the way this offseason is playing out. But I do wish we could live in a world as far as things
that... Wait. You can't just say that and not explain what
you're... That's called a tease. You have to listen further into the podcast to find out what that might be. For an Indians fan looking at this trade, I think it would be very easy, because we're talking about the Padres. We're talking about the Padres trading for a pitcher with some control still and perceived to be a below market deal, though, you know, I don't know what the market is anymore in 2021, to be honest. I don't know what it's going to be in the future. And I don't think teams exactly know either. But I mean, there are a lot of comparable elements in those two trades between Clevinger and Snell and the returns that they got. I wish we could live in a universe where the Clevinger trade never happened. I want to see who are the prospects that Tampa Bay would be targeting, and are any of them the guys that the Indians got in the trade? I know it's not, there's no way to ever know that. But if those prospects were still on the table, would Tampa Bay be targeting any of them? And if you could know that, and there were some of those pieces being involved in the Snell trade, I think it would make you feel a little bit better about the outcome of the Clevinger trade, because now you're talking about another very smart organization that a lot of people, whenever the Rays make a trade, they say, I love it for Tampa Bay. What did they get? Who was in the trade? You just automatically love it because you're so trained to believe that they know what they're doing when it comes to trading for younger prospects or younger players. But it also could potentially make you feel worse if Tampa Bay would say, no, we'll still take the same four guys we got in the Snell trade. We want nothing to do with any of the guys that Cleveland got. But there were a lot of very comparable elements in both of those deals. And the bleed over to know if those pieces were available and Tampa Bay could get them, would they covet them? Would be very fascinating to know.
Yeah, what's weird about the Indians, I mean, I won't place much blame on them for the Bauer trade and the return, just because everyone in the world knew he was going to free agency in a year and a half, and the Indians also didn't want to pay him $18 million or whatever he was scheduled to make in arbitration for 2020. So, and they proved that they had the pitching to survive his departure, even though he went and won a Cy Young award. But the fact that they were able to get Logan Allen and Scott Moss and Framil Reyes and a couple others, like, that's fine. I don't think you can hammer them for that trade. Plus, it was a three-team deal. It was complicated. I mean, whatever. The thing is, when you trade Bauer, Clevinger, I even don't want to put Kluber in this conversation, just because I don't think people realize he didn't have a ton of trade value. Like, everyone knew the Indians were desperate to trade him, and he was bad in seven starts in 2019 before he missed the entire year. So nobody knew what he had left in the tank. Did we expect them to get more than Emmanuel Clase? Yes. And we've said that. But for the point I'm making here, I think with the Clevinger trade, the Bauer trade, and an impending Francisco Lindor trade, if and when it happens, to not acquire any like frontline slam dunk top 10 prospects, it's a little weird, right? Like, Luis Patino is one of the best pitching prospects in baseball.
True. When is that guy going to pitch?
When is he going to pitch?
Right. That's when you're talking about the pieces in this trade. Like, you could make a case that maybe the Indians should have traded for him. Well, you even said last night via text they're probably not going to trade for frontline starting pitching, at least not as the centerpiece of a deal. And that's a kid that's probably a year away. I mean, probably 2022, realistically.
Yeah, I mean, certainly pitch in 2021.
So, okay, well, if you target that guy and that's now the centerpiece of the deal, that's still a guy that's not going to help you, realistically, I would guess, for another 2 years when you make that trade. And they're not trading for Francisco Mejia again. They're not reacquiring him. So as you look at this trade, it's not like, well, oh, I wish the Indians could have targeted that guy in that deal. Well, who was that guy in this specific trade
that you wish
they would have targeted?
I don't know that it exists. And we also don't know how teams value other prospects. I mean, we can go by these prospect lists. We don't know, like, that doesn't mean that that's how the Padres feel about their players, or that's how the Indians or Rays feel about their players. And I think the thing that is a little tricky for the Indians is that, like you said, like, Patino, I think any team would love to have him. He throws super hard. He's really well regarded. Okay. It doesn't make as much sense for the Indians because they don't have a desperate need there. They really need position players, and they feel like they need quantity in the upper levels of the minors more than quality, maybe. We know that they have 4,000 different 19 and 20-year-old middle infielders who may or may not reach the major leagues, may or may not play middle infield, and we're talking 3 years away, at least. So you know that part of it. But how are they going to be helped in 2021, in 2022? And a starting pitcher, like, if you just look at it from a value standpoint, you're like, yeah, Patino would make tons of sense, but I think then you're like, okay, well, then we need to probably trade Plesac Carrasco or like someone else, because you need to still be efficient. I mean, this team hasn't had an outfielder in like 3 decades. So at some point you have to find a way to get one. And do you want to just acquire Josh Naylor from the Padres, or do you want to acquire Luis Patino, if that was even an option, and then trade a starting pitcher for an outfielder somewhere? I mean, I think...
Or you're trading for Patino, and then you're flipping him immediately?
Yeah.
It's really confusing at that point.
It's all, not that it's a gift and a curse that they have so much pitching, but I do think it does, like, limit them a little bit, just because it's not something they need, whereas, like, the Rays are like, shit, like, we'll take this dude. I mean, why not? We're getting rid of Snell. We lost Charlie Morton. We might use a starting pitcher once or twice a week. We'll take this guy. So it's... You can't compare it like that. But I do still wonder, like, what the other options were. And was there any scenario where they could acquire... I mean, if they don't get an outfielder for Lindor, like, how do you trade all these big pieces and not fix the problem that has plagued you for years? It's why you end up doing things like moving Nolan Jones to right field. And I think... I don't know. I think it's a little bit of a misfire on the front office's part. And I think it's tricky. You know, they wanted to trade Clevinger when they did because they were worried about this offseason and potentially not getting as much for him because teams are going to be stingy. We've seen that.
And you still can't convince me that they didn't make, on some level, that trade due to health concerns. Not that they knew he was going to need mega surgery and be out for 2021, but I think they always felt like it was at least a possibility. And it's not like it was something that came out of left field either for him, because he had had health issues, quite a few of them, of different sorts of varieties before. So I think that element added to the ticking clock of the Clevinger debate. And you can say things don't play out the same way because, you know, who knows what ends up happening if he stays with Cleveland. But if the alternative is you didn't make that trade and now Clevinger is out for 2021, how would you feel about that? That alternative? I know you can't exactly say that it's going to be the same, but it does at least lend some credence to their desire to make that trade when they did. It's just, did they utilize that trade piece in the right way? Which is something we're going to debate until we see some of these guys in the major leagues.
Yeah, and they could, I mean, look, especially since Clevinger's going to miss 2021 and the history of pitchers returning after 2 elbow operations is not great. But like Gabriel Arias could be a really good shortstop. Owen Miller could help them pretty soon, just being like a, I don't know, like a David Eckstein type contact hitter who can play middle infield and do all sorts of things.
And Josh Naylor is the best playoff hitter I've ever seen.
Yeah. I mean, they have, I just always wonder, you know, front offices, and I don't think it's just like, here, you can have package A or package B. I just wonder, you know, teams have different philosophies on would you rather trade for the one stud prospect or the 3 to 5, like, decent but not exceptionally regarded prospects. I think it's an individual case-by-case basis, but it seems like the Indians prefer the latter. And
well, it's putting a lot of faith in your player development staff.
Right.
That they're going to be able to get those. Well, you trade for them and you think they're already good, but you think they're going to be even better which once you get your hands on them, or something you pinpoint or see that you really would like to slightly alter to unlock something that's even better within themselves.
The other thing, though, is that, you know, back to, like, the connection with the fan base, right? Like, the Rays have never drawn well. They know they're not ever going to draw well. You know, maybe in Montreal they would in 7 years or whatever that was. You know, from Cleveland's perspective, it's like the team has said for years that we've heard mouthpieces for the team say, like, look at the attendance. And I'm not saying this is wrong, but, like, attendance has always been in the bottom third, and so the payroll needs to be in the bottom third. And I don't want to turn this into a discussion about ownership and payroll, but, you know, it's almost like the cat and mouse game, where it's, if attendance was the reason you didn't spend more to address glaring weaknesses during the height of your contention window, then how do all these decisions made over the last couple of years, and the decisions we're expecting to happen over the next couple months, how do those help that? You know, in a post-pandemic world, are fans going to come out to see Yu Chang and Josh Naylor and Owen Miller and other people they've never heard of on a team that fights to win 84 games? I don't know. I think this is just like a never-ending issue. And it's a baseball issue. It's not just Cleveland. But, you know, there has to be a way to both grow the sport. I think of the NFL and I think about how, like, the goals of the sport should match the goals of the fans. And in the NFL, quarterbacks are essential. You have to have a star quarterback if you want to win a Super Bowl. And those are also the guys who are the household names. Those are the guys who fans buy jerseys of. They're the ones that get paid hundreds of millions of dollars. And, like, I'm not saying the NFL is perfect by any means, and it certainly helps to have the revenue sharing they do, but, like, that should be the model. And in baseball, I know it's not, you know, one player isn't the cause of so many different things, but there needs to be a way to both build stars and keep stars in cities. And I don't think it's figured out. And even though the Rays may have made a really good trade in terms of surplus value and just showing that they're going to be a dominant force in the future, like, it's not good for the game. Again, if I'm a Rays fan, I'm like, well, I'm not buying a Wander Franco jersey because in 2025, we're going to be right back here.
Though it's not really a surprise. It's not like, oh my God, I can't believe that they did this. That's just the way that they're not reaching the World Series if they're not making these sorts of moves. So it's a weird element because they have the success that they do in large part because they make the trades that they do. But at the same time, when you're in a position to be good, you don't want to have to be out there trading your one or two starter. You know, whatever you think of Snell, he's a really good pitcher. I'm not sure that he's one of the best pitchers in baseball, but I think he's a slight notch below that. And you could make, you know, whatever criticisms of him that you want to based on his inability to face a team the third time. The numbers reflect those shortcomings. But when used the correct way, he's a really, really important pitcher, especially when it comes playoff time. So, yeah, you're right.
And he's not making that much money. His contract's like 3 years, $39 million.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be a burden.
No. I almost feel like any time we do this, I need to utilize our this tool that I have so we can talk about the payroll. Like that needs to happen. We discuss anything that is like the Dolans related needs to be broken out. What does this say about Francisco Mejia? You mentioned this being the second trade, but really it's the third huge trade he's been a part of. You have teams, the first one being Jonathan Lucroy saying no thank you and it never happened, but he's still part of these trades where teams really want him and then they can't wait to get rid of him. They can't find a role for him. I can't quite figure out what to make of his career, but also because he's been on our radar for so long, you forget this dude is still really young. What, 24, 25?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of career is still left to go for Francisco Mejia, who comes in to, you know, for many people, still a lot of people believe he can be a really good major league hitter. Just defensively, where does he fit? I don't know. But the Rays, if the Rays can find a way to get the most out of his talent, I would not be surprised. Not be surprised in the least.
Well, and you have a designated hitter spot too. You know, you bring him back to the American League where...
The NL might have that too.
Yeah, but we still don't know. Even, I mean, this is ridiculous. Baseball, what?
The sport ridiculous! Needs,
like, can the sport have someone in power who likes the sport?
He's so nice. Has some clarity on how you build your team.
It's unbelievable. Yes. So, I think everybody believes that he can be a good hitter. He's got crazy bat speed and just, you know, he's the type of guy who, like, shouldn't strike out a ton and should rack up doubles and maybe hit some home runs. Like, he seemed like a dude who was going to fall out of bed and hit 300 with, he wasn't going to walk much, wasn't going to strike out much. You know, the slugging percentage would probably be pretty good. The question has been defense. I mean, it seemed like in Cleveland, he had the perfect situation where you can learn from Roberto Perez. You can learn from Sandy Alomar. But if those guys bail on you and they're not sure that you can stick with it defensively, and you know they start asking him to try out the outfield, and I think there was a little bit of some tension there, that doesn't paint the greatest portrait for his defensive future. But... Again, you can hide some of those warts when you hit really well,
yeah,
or when you have the DH spot available. And you can't ignore the fact that he was really highly rated prospect and had hit at every stop in the minors. And from what I know, like I know he's, I think he's a good kid. I didn't talk to him a ton. I know he was taking it upon himself to learn English when he was with the Indians and really refine that. The communication aspect of things, so that he'd be on the same page with his pitchers and his coaching staff. But, you know, it never worked out in Cleveland, and it's, I don't know. He seems like the kind of guy who you'll wake up and it'll be like 2023. He'll be, I don't know, 28 years old, and he'll be like a really legitimate hitter. And it's like, oh, yeah, I remember him. We were waiting on this, and then it happens, yeah. Just like that.
Yeah. So I don't think the Indians should trade Francisco Lindor.
I'm sorry, what?
I was just waiting for the spit take.
I was literally drinking water.
I know, just waiting for it. Yeah, I'm not sold on it. I'm not saying that it's a bad idea or any of the things we talked about before don't still make a lot of sense. It's based solely in my mind on the speculation that we've had and the attempts to put together potential Francisco Lindor trades. All of them have been so very underwhelming, or at least leave me skeptical that the team trading for him is actually going to pull the trigger on a deal that is going to, the Indians are going to be pleased with and feel like they didn't trade away an all-time talent for something that's better than draft pick compensation. Knowing what this division will look like in 2021, you know, right now, probably still on semi-even ground with the White Sox. The Twins right there, maybe slightly ahead of both. You keep Francisco Lindor and you just fill in some pieces around him and you take one last swipe at trying to win a championship with an all-time really good pitching staff that you've created for yourself, at least starting staff, and a bullpen that might be fun with a lot of hard throwers now. Would it be so bad just to let this thing ride with Lindor and actually take a legitimate shot at another World Series? I know it gets so easy to get lost in all the things the Indians don't have, but if you do keep Francisco Lindor and he has a more typical Francisco Lindor season, or even has like a breakout season that he had a couple of years ago, and you pair that with a guy that continues to find himself in the finalists of AL MVP and a guy that just won the Cy Young, and people are trying to find ways that he could even be better in 2021 on top of having a young pitching staff that all of them will be another year with some experience under their belt. This is all based on what the potential trades could be, but if you're asking me to choose between something that's a little underwhelming but you're at least getting something. Or taking this last ride with Francisco Lindor still being part of this roster and betting on him to have a Francisco Lindor type season, and we know it could be 6, 7, 8 win season. I don't know. I think that's all possible when you're talking about a talent like that. I might be more prone to just say forget the underwhelming trades and just keep Francisco Lindor and take one last shot at a World Series.
You drop this on me this far into the podcast with no warning?
That's the best way to roll, my friend.
This is like an hour-long debate in itself.
Well, imagine. We might have to, I don't know, come back later this week to continue to discuss it.
Or next year. I mean, your points are valid. Look, I'll be honest. If I'm another team, I'm not trading for Francisco Lindor. Hell no. Like, if I'm the Blue Jays, and I have to give up, let's say, Lourdes Gurriel and a prospect or two, why would I do that? When one, I don't even know where the hell we're going to be playing our home games in 2021, let alone if we'll have fans in attendance and we'll be making revenue. Number two, I'm a team on the rise. I'm still probably behind the Rays and the Yankees. And why am I going to give up talent when I could just sign Lindor in a year? I don't know if he would sign a long-term deal with me before then. And if it's not Lindor that I sign in a year, maybe it's Javi Baez. Maybe it's Trevor Story. Maybe it's Carlos Correa. Maybe it's Corey Seager. You've got this ridiculous class of free agent shortstops coming. So if I'm the Reds, well, they've been like trimming payroll, and you're hearing all sorts of names of theirs pop up in trade rumors. Like, again, it's like, why would I fork over some prospect capital when I could go sign Didi Gregorius or Marcus Semien or Andrelton Simmons? I mean, there are so many different hurdles to this. And if I'm the Mets, the team that might make the most sense just because they can be really aggressive and have a sense of urgency from this new owner who has deep pockets and might not care about mortgaging some of the future. Well, if I'm the Mets, like, I know the Indians are desperate. I know there aren't a ton of teams out there that are great matches for this. So I would hold all the leverage in this trade talk. And I might prefer to go sign George Springer right now and then sign Lindor in a year. Like, there really aren't, there's not a perfect match out there. I know Dombrowski in Philly might change the way that dynamic appears. There isn't an obvious answer. I really believe you're going to start to hear rumors ramp up in January. I think you're going to hear mystery teams and all sorts of teams checking in on Lindor's availability and all that BS we hear every winter. Look, I believe there's a better chance that they keep him. How can I phrase this? If you would have asked me a couple months ago, I would have said there's just about no chance they keep him. Now I think there's a chance for all those reasons I laid out. I still think it's absolute odds-on favorite that they trade him. You bring up an interesting point.
And I think if they could get what they wanted, that's the avenue they would not hesitate to go down. But I come back to my skepticism for a lot of the reasons you laid out, that there's going to be a team out there desperate enough and wanting to make that move right now. The benefits of doing that, I mean, you get a full year of Francisco Lindor, but there's just so much uncertainty. And if you do believe you're going to sign him in 2022 and you don't think that 2021 is your last shot to win a title, then you aren't pulling the trigger right now, at least not for the type of price that the Indians are wanting. I mean, would I give up some things for him? Sure. There are some things that I would give up, some young players, some prospects that I would probably be comfortable with taking that risk and at least having that shot at a World Series with Lindor part of it in 2021. But I don't think that's going to satisfy the Indians' needs. And if it's that far below what your expectations or at least your desires or what you would feel comfortable moving Lindor, if it's that far below it, then I would not in the slightest hesitate, I think, because I keep wrestling with this, I don't think I would hesitate to just hold on to him and then take your shot at 2021 winning a title with Francisco Lindor.
Well, and imagine trading for Francisco Lindor and not getting any sort of, like, marketing boost from it. Because it's not like you're going to sell a shit ton more tickets because you might be at minimal capacity for half the season. So, yeah, there are valid points to the argument you're making. I think the issue is So many fans have asked, like, why don't they just keep him one more year and just go all in and try to win it? There's no going all in. Going all in was 2017 and I guess 2018. And ownership felt like it got burned. And it didn't pay the dividends that they were hoping it would. And they recoiled pretty quickly and, you know, the rest is history. And so it's not like the issue is that if they keep Lindor, look, if they get rid of Lindor, I don't know that they're going to be spending that much money. I've prophesized on here that I think the plan is they would trade Lindor and then they would sign a middle infielder free agent for a few million bucks, kind of like Cesar Hernandez last year. Maybe it'll be Cesar Hernandez again. If you're keeping Lindor and you're paying him $20 million, I highly doubt that you're going to go and spend more money to add. You know, you still need a second baseman. You might need outfield help. You might need another reliever.
Maybe that puts even more pressure on a need to trade Carlos Carrasco before the year starts.
Yeah. It's a messy situation. You know, it was going to be messy pre-pandemic, and now it's just a shit show.
Yeah, it's weird that you possess a Francisco Lindor, and yet it feels like the Indians don't hold any of this leverage at all when you have a star player. And it did feel different at the beginning of the offseason. I'm with you. I thought all signs pointed to them absolutely trading him. But now I say it's closer to a coin flip. I just don't think that they're going to get the type of return that makes giving up the shot at a title with him part of it. I mean, the Indians, for all their shortcomings, they're still a really good team. And if you look at Fangraphs wins above replacement right now, you know, they're up there with some teams that believe they could win a championship, just like the team we just talked about in the Chicago White Sox here in the division. So it's not like you're starting at a place where it's unrealistic that this team thinks it could win a title with Lindor part of it. I mean, you still made the playoffs last year, and you did it without Lindor being anything more than an average hitter. What happens if he's 20% above average? And you add that to an offense that maybe Josh Naylor looks like the guy he was in the playoffs, though I doubt he'll be quite as good as that could look. I mean, that's like Scott Brosius level playoff performing. But it's not like if you keep Lindor, it's some sort of unrealistic expectation that you can be a contender. You absolutely are right now with him part of it. And so that's why I hesitate now to want to just say flip him for the best offer that you can get. I don't know that best offer you can get and you just click accept on that is the right course of action anymore. I think I'm leaning more towards keep him. If you just don't see anything that's forget overwhelming. Don't go underwhelming. At least be whelmed.
Well, I think the bottom line here is we can tie this back to the Rays conversation. It's a shame that like these are the conversations we have to have when talking about this sport. Like, NBA free agency hits or the offseason starts and like there's 7 max contracts given out within the first 5 minutes and you've got major trades and like, I mean, in a way the offseason has become more exciting than the regular season, which is a problem in itself, but like there's got to be a happy medium here. And like baseball, you know, like the goal of every sport should be all cities, fan bases. There should never be apathy. You know, you should either be excited about the present or excited about the future. And I think in some of these cities, you can't even enjoy the present because the team is looking more intently at the future than the present, when they're good in the present.
Although, to tie it back into the NBA, it always felt like you can never really enjoy the present when the Cavaliers had some dude named LeBron James. It was always like a ticking clock. You better get this championship now. You can't enjoy the ride that you're currently on.
It's a good thing they got it.
Yeah, they did. They absolutely did. And those are memories that live on forever, unlike this podcast. It must end. You can subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Spotify. I did pull a random Cleveland Indian of the day, but this went a little more lengthy than I anticipated. That's
just
my fault.
Give me the middle name.
It would have been... Oh, where are you? Tyler. Tyler is the middle name. Definitely not his name backwards, by the way. No, I'm going to save this for next week.
Right.
I think this is a good one. I'm going to save this for next week.
Well, I'm going to research every MLB player with the middle name Tyler.
You plug that into your database. I hope you got one of those for Christmas. Till next time, we are out of here. Have a good New Year, everybody. Stay safe, and we'll see you. Bye.
The Selby's Godcast, featuring Zach Meisel and TJ Zuppi, is presented by our supporters at Anchor.
To help support the podcast, visit anchor.fm/Selby's Godcast. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you like what you hear, we sure hope you do, be sure to leave us a 5-star review. And if you have suggestions, drop us a DM on Twitter @SelbysGodcast. Thanks for listening.